This is the FCB Radio Network. Real talk worldwide. Online at FCBRadio.com.
Necessary rough when I bust. Into your zones, microphones get crushed out. I break this up and down with dust. I do what I must. Do what the rush.
Buenos dias, gente. Hello, everybody. You have just tapped in once again to Necessary Roughness. I'm your girl, Erica Rodriguez. With me, you got God the and CJ Cobb. God, how's your day, bud?
What the?
Good. See how the special treatment that I get, CJ?
Yeah, I do see that. What is that? How does Garves get this grand introduction?
And then there's CJ.
It's just some Joe Smo CJ just hanging
out. We're going to deal with you later on, CJ. I mean, right now, let's do this.
Where is the love? Go ahead, Erica.
But I'm good, by the way. I appreciate how you asking. How are you good. Though? I mean, I could be better. You
know, why is that, Garbs? Why is that, Mr. Confident?
The Browns took a serious L.
We don't have to go so deep into that right now.
Oh, no, CJ. Yes, you do.
CJ, how you doing right now, buddy? How was your week?
You know what? My week was all right. It was good. How was your fan experience? My fan experience, you know what? Again, Jacksonville, I know that's where you're going with this, Garb. See, Jacksonville's fan experience is on par with nobody else, okay? It's the best in the NFL, okay? Don't even get me started on how.
Okay, we'll talk about that later on. Hold on.
Okay, so I just don't get to talk. Great.
No. Don't go too deep into it, CJ. We want to save the juicy stuff for, you know, at the appropriate time. You know, so
what?
At the appropriate time, you know, everything has a time. That's what I've heard. But you know, how was your week though? Like, did you have a great day? How, like, what's new?
are you talking to me now? Can I speak?
CJ, it's all yours, buddy.
Okay, thank you. My week and my day was great. You know why? Because I'm standing on this side of the earth and not underneath it, okay? So, yes, awesome. It's a great day. It's a great week. And I got to go and vote. I thought it was going to be long lines and arguments, but everybody was really nice, even when I got lost and almost went into the back room of all the workers. They were very polite on escorting me out the building, so...
Well, yes, that's awesome. Voting is good. Everybody go out and vote if you haven't voted ready. So, y'all ready, guys? Let's talk about the Browns and the Steelers.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
7-38, you guys. Man, 7-38.
Good Lord.
Garbs, you said the Browns was, you know, you said they was going to win. So, let's start with you first.
Yeah, you did.
But here's the thing. I'm always going to say the Browns are going to win. That's just what it is. So that's
great optimism.
Let's just get that out of the way for starters. I'm always going to say that because it's any given Sunday. And don't forget that. Any given Sunday, somebody can step up and win a game that you do not think that they are supposed to win. But it was a bad L. It looked bad. The Steelers were putting constant pressure on the Browns, and the Browns just seemed to not have an answer for it. It was pretty crazy, and you could tell that Baker looked a little bit flustered back there. So, you know, they definitely got to tighten up on some things with the offensive line because they got exposed. And, you know, I imagine that other teams are going to try to take a play out of the Steelers playbook. You know, it doesn't help that Chubb is still out, you know, because, you know, his running ability. I mean, of course, we have Kareem Hunt. He's spectacular, too. But Chubb is just he's from a different world when it pertains to being a running back. So hopefully, you know, they tighten up that O-line and, you know, we can move forward and progress in the future.
Do you think that the Browns can rebound from this loss, or is it just a typical Browns thing?
Well, I don't want to get into the whole, oh, it's a typical Browns thing. Of course they can rebound from a loss. This is a different team that we have now than even we had last year. So a loss, you know, losses happen. Anytime that you're playing a game in any sport, an L can happen. Now, of course, the level of L, you know, is a little bit high, but they definitely can rebound, I think.
Yeah, one more question for me before I give it to you, TJ. Is it time for a new quarterback, or is Baker Mayfield still developing? What's your thoughts on that?
Here's the thing is that he's had three different coaches during his entire tenure as a Cleveland Brown. So that means three different schemes, and, you know, it's a brand new scheme now than it was last year. So how can a quarterback truly develop when you're changing everything all the time? So you have to give people time to develop. And I know that as Cleveland fans, everybody wants this like extraordinary and excellent stuff to just happen out of the blue and randomly be spectacular, but that's just not how the game is played. That's not how it works. It's not just going to be an overnight success and turnaround. Like, you have to build onto it. So right now we still have done something when we were 4-1, we did do something that hasn't happened since 1994. So we have to still be appreciative of that and watch the growth and let them grow without complaining as couch quarterbacks.
What you think, CJ?
Well, Garb, you know all about being a couch quarterback, don't you? I don't think you could ever take a 7-step drop back and throw it 30 yards, much less 50.
I got an arm.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. You have an arm, a leg, an ear, a back, a shoulder. Yeah. With the one thing you don't have is hair, but I digress. listen, so the loss that the Browns took is it comes down to this. They figured out the Browns' weakness right now. Obviously, it's just stop the run and let Baker Mayfield have to beat you. And right now, it's proven that Baker Mayfield cannot beat you if he has to throw the ball. Baker Mayfield is not going to be able to dig you out of a hole just because he doesn't have a big enough shovel. Right now, as far as the run game goes with the Browns, yes, it hurts to lose Nick Chubb because he was part of that big 1-2 punch with Kareem Hunt. But Kareem Hunt is no slouch. He's still a Pro Bowl caliber running back, a special running back who made all kinds of great strides in Kansas City. And you hope that that would start showing itself more now that he is the main option in Cleveland. But if you load the box against the Browns with the offensive line that they have, not being able to open holes and get him open, your team is pretty much one-dimensional. Now you're putting everything on Baker to pick the defenses apart. And right now it doesn't show, or it doesn't look like Baker really can understand how the defenses are moving and adjusting to the formations on the field. So to kind of answer your other question, Erica, I agree with Garbs on the fact that Baker has had multiple coaches and different offenses that he's had to learn. So I cut him a little slack there. However,
a little bit.
However, bro, this is what, year three, right, Garbs? Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Year three, we have to see some sort of progression. And right now, right, I don't know. Without the run game, it looks like Baker regresses back to running around scared for his life.
He did. You're absolutely right.
It's not a good look right now for the Browns.
All right, guys. So listen, we have a little less than 3 minutes. CJ. The Jaguars versus the Lion. We're going to go to you first because we know you have a lot to say. What's your thoughts? Do you still – I mean, we have to go back to the question I asked a few – I think it was last segment or – I'm sorry, last week. Do you think that they need a new – you need? Do they think – I apologize. Do you think the coach needs a new –
I get it. It's hard to put into words.
Do you think they need a new coach? The Jaguars, like, what's going on?
Do I think they need a new coach? Okay. So let me put it to you this way. Our coach is smart like a fox right now. See, what he's doing is having the team lay low. He is ducking all expectations. See, now at this point, nobody expects the Jaguars to do anything except for the true Jaguar fans. We know and we believe that they can overcome any obstacle.
Bro,
at some point. So what we are training to do, this is like ninja training, okay? This is ninja training for the Jaguars. What we're doing is luring everybody into a false sense of security by lowering our standard of play so that when the time comes to strike, we're there, baby. We strike with deadly accuracy, and then we're on our way. We're on the rise right now. Yep, I see it coming. It's coming. It's coming. What?
Y'all lost to the Detroit Lions.
Listen, Detroit has a lot of things going. They have a lot of automotive. They have a great automotive industry that's on the rise.
We're not talking about the automotive industry. You know, they talk about football.
They have history in football. They have the great Barry Sanders. You know, maybe they channeled some of Barry.
34-16.
Well, at least we scored in the double digits.
Me.
Yeah. Huh?
But you're
still scoring the double digits.
Record now, 1-5.
Yeah, you scored 7 points.
You scored
7 points. That's all. Like I said, we're luring everybody into a false sense of security so that when the time is right, the Jaguars will strike, much like actual Jaguars in the jungle do to their prey.
You got bars.
That's what you. I know I got bars. All right, and I got faith. I got faith in the Jaguars.
He's getting all mad at me, man.
I'm not getting mad at you, dog.
I didn't lose.
It's passion.
You did lose. I didn't cause you to lose.
You did lose.
What are you talking about? Y'all lost.
Don't try to switch the conversation.
I'm not trying to switch. I'm just saying we at least scored into the double digits. You only scored 7 points.
Your L's are multiplied. Your L's multiply our L's. So
we played some tough competition. All right.
We lost to the Lions.
The Lions are a team also on the rise. All right. I have TJ Hawkinson on my fantasy team, and he's a good player. So yeah.
Okay.
All right, guys. All right. We're gonna have to bring it back. All right. So because of that, we're gonna have to wrap it up, you guys. Let's take a quick break. Before we go on the break, we have an upcoming interview coming up with Anthony Gonzalez. You guys don't miss this interview. It is going to be mind-blowing. I am pretty sure of it. We'll be right back. Necessary Roughness.
Do you feel like everyone is yelling at each other, but no one is listening to each other or themselves? I'm Kira Davis, host of Just Listen to Yourself, a weekly exercise in critical thinking and drawing our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Because I believe when we take the time to examine our own talking points, we can realize we're not always saying what we think we're saying. Download Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis on iHeartRadio or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did Paul Revere really say, "The British are coming"? And how was George Washington chosen to lead the first American army? Join us for the Growing Patriot podcast, a place for curious kids to ask the big questions about our nation's history and get kid-friendly answers from the country's top experts. Help your child learn about and cherish America's exceptional history. Subscribe to Growing Patriots on iHeartRadio or wherever you get your podcasts today.
This is Necessary Roughness.
Welcome back to Necessary Roughness. Thank you for coming back. As I said earlier, we have an amazing interview for you guys. We have the first Latino to represent Ohio in Congress, drafted by Indianapolis Colts in 2007, signed with New England Patriots in 2012, Anthony Gonzalez. ¡Wepa! I love my Hispanic people. Darvio, the mic is on you.
You just wanted to be able to say wepa.
I had to.
Welcome to my buddy Anthony Gonzalez, congressman from the great state of Ohio and former Indianapolis Colts. Welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So we've done interviews before on other shows on the network, and it's usually, you know, about the news of the day and politics and stuff like that. This is the first time that we've actually had a chance to talk about some sports. So talk a little bit about, first, just what your experience was like playing. First, let's go to Ignatius, because you've been in big programs from high school on, because you went to Ignatius, then you went to Ohio State, then you were in the NFL. So talk about what those experiences were like, going from a big program locally to the biggest football program in the state to then making it to the NFL?
Yeah, well, great question. So I'll just speak exclusively about the coaches that I had and sort of the leaders that I was exposed to, which I sometimes you just get lucky in life, right? And in my football career, I was immensely lucky. So at Ignatius, I played for a Hall of Fame coach, Chuck Kyle, learned a ton from him. And obviously that was a big stage for a high school kid. And I loved every second of it. And you learn a lot about the game, but really, you know, from people like Chuck Kyle, you learn about life and you learn about leadership. From there, went on to Ohio State, same thing. And another Hall of Fame coach, which coach Jim Tressel, still one of my mentors to this day, somebody I talk to about every big decision that I make in my life. Talk to him about, you know, whether I should propose to my now wife, talk to him about whether I should get into Congress and run for political office, all these big decisions, whether I should go to business. Wow. I kind of sort of lean on him because he's such a wise person, and try to emulate him in a lot of ways. So got lucky there. And then in the NFL, you know, my first coach was Tony Dungy, who, you know, the first black coach to win a Super Bowl. He and Lovie Smith were the first two to ever coach in one. And that was the year before I got to Indianapolis, but an unbelievable leader and an even better guy. And again, somebody I lean on quite a bit. I talked to him, you know, earlier this summer when George Floyd was killed and the social unrest and just sort of how I can be a more productive voice and a better leader inside our community. And those are all things that, you know, those are experiences getting to be led by those incredible leaders that, again, sometimes you just get lucky. And I did and have been lucky to be around those guys and just try to do what I can to take what they've taught me and apply it to my own life, knowing I fall short every day, but they're so incredible. And but for football, I would not have had that. So I'm immensely grateful for that opportunity.
Right. And one of the things that we like to talk about a lot on the show, we've had several former athletes, former football players. And we like to talk a lot about that experience and how that the experience that you got in the league or through playing professional sports, what you were able to translate to the next phase of your life. So as you are now in Congress, were there anything that you learned? I think you touched on it a little bit in the previous question, but were there anything that you learned along the way in those locker rooms, in those experiences that you were able to translate as you made your run for Congress and now being in Congress and working on behalf of the American people?
Yeah. So, I mean, the leadership component for sure, right? You try to take those lessons and apply them. And again, I wouldn't put myself anywhere near the category of those great, great men, but you know, that's a big one. And I was always very aware that I was being led by incredible people. And so I tried to take notes and those sorts of things. I'll give you another one though, that maybe is even more applicable. So, you know, my NFL career, I was drafted in the first round, but ultimately it didn't pan out anywhere near how I wanted to or my team wanted to. I basically played for 2 years and then was hurt for 3 years. And so, you know, it just didn't go the way I wanted to. And it was immensely disappointing. And so obviously you know, the outside voices come in and start bashing in, you know, you were a bust and all these sorts of things. And
yeah,
to some extent it's true. And so, you know, dealing with that, and I'll be honest, I didn't deal with it great at that point. I was 26 years old, 27 years old, and I let it get to me more than it should have, and my skin wasn't as thick as it probably needed to be. But going through that process and coming out okay on the other side, I ultimately went to Stanford Business School, got an MBA, ran a business, sort of recovered and got my life back before getting into politics. Going through that and being in the fire and getting, you know, hit pretty hard by the media and whatnot, prepared me pretty well for this.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
That's great, actually. I just thought about that, like, wow, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. That's
yeah. Felt like you're the enemy all the time, which is how politics feels in a lot of ways. Right. You know, that NFL experience, which didn't go the way I wanted to, That has made me stronger in this role, and have given me an ability to just keep moving, even if, you know, there's critics on either side.
Garbs.
Well, one thing that we talked about a couple weeks ago on the show was, you know, college athletes being compensated, you know, for their skill, for their talent, and what they actually bring to these schools and these universities when it pertains to, you know, how much money that they actually bring to the universities by, you know, that's basically off of their skill. Now, I know a couple of years ago, one thing that you sponsored, I believe, was a bill to get that college athletes could actually monetize their name and likeness. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we just introduced this a couple months ago, and this is an issue that, frankly, I was thinking about when I was in college football. So, you know, let's just be honest, right? These kids, the scholarship is enormously valuable, and the opportunity to play college sports is unparalleled. It changed my life. I have nothing but positive things to say about that, and that's true for, you know, 99% of college athletes. My wife is a college athlete, you know, an incredible experience. That being said, you know, the reality is these athletes in many instances could market themselves. Mm-hmm. That could be as much as, you know, signing a shoe deal for, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, but it could be as small as teaching swimming lessons in the summer. You know, if you're a swimmer, right? The way the schools are set up today, you can't do either one of those things or anything in between. So, the thought that we had was, well, that doesn't really make sense. You know, college athletes right now are the only people in the country who cannot capitalize off their own name, image, and likeness. The only people in the country, even members of Congress could. I could write a book and sell it, and, you know, that's capitalizing off name, image, and likeness. College athletes can't. That didn't make sense to me. So I said, why don't we put a bill forward that would allow for this and clean up some of the state laws, because there were different states. This was the real catalyst. Different states had passed their own laws. So you had, you know, 50 states with 30 different name, image, and likeness laws. So we said, well, that's kind of chaotic, but let's pass one law that applies all across the country and allows for the college athlete to do this. Cause I think it's an important right. And you know, the truth of the matter is what we're talking about in most instances is, you know, minority kids from tough backgrounds who this might be the only opportunity they have to do something like this. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's an important right, because not every great college football player is a great pro. They can, you know, if they have a marketable skill set, they can apply it. And so that's what we're trying to do. You know, I think we're probably going to revisit this early next Congress. Mm-hmm. Right now we're still dealing with COVID and all that, but once we get into the next Congress, I think we'll start to revisit it. And I'm really proud of the work we've done so far. It's a bipartisan bill. We've got members of the Congressional Black Caucus. We've got some of the most progressive members. We've got some of the most conservative members in Congress. So we're trying to hit as many constituencies as possible and really build that base out so we can get this done.
And now, you guys, we have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned for the rest of this interview. Necessary Roughness.
Yo, it's your man, it's your best friend, Davey. Check out my new single, Looking for Love, available right now on all platforms. Peace.
Hi, my name is Sarah Lee, host of Marble Halls and Silver Screens with Sarah Lee, a podcast dedicated to exploring the connections, financial, ideological, political, and otherwise, between the Marble Halls of Washington, D.C. and the Silver Screens of Hollywood, California. I bring you the news unfiltered and with a perspective the mainstream press tends to ignore. So I do hope you'll check it out and enjoy the show. Download Marble Halls and Silver Screens with Sarah Lee at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts today.
This is Necessary Roughness.
Welcome back to this amazing interview that we have with Anthony Gonzalez. Go for it.
Really think it's a great idea. You know, I used to live in Columbus for a few years, and you know, we know how big the Buckeyes football is down there, and you know, a place like that is, you know, or any, you know, big school that has a strong football program, strong sports program, I should say. You know, these kids out there should have the ability, you know, if they want to endorse or sign on to promote a pizza place down there, or, you know, to get on a commercial for a car or something like that. I think that they should be able to do that without being reprimanded, you know, because I think that that's going to also accomplish a few things, is that if they do get to the next level, it's going to put them in a position so they understand money early. You know what I mean? And then next, in addition to that, that's going to also, for those that don't go to the next level, that's going to position them to expand their career, you know, in another direction if they don't go to the NFL or go pro.
I totally agree. And I'll give you another one I think that is underappreciated right now is, you know, if you know that you are in fact able to do this, I think the way you present yourself on social media, the way that you present yourself in public, you're going to be more aware of sort of what you're putting out there, right?
Absolutely.
Because you know, hey, if I say something really stupid, if I post something really dumb, you know, I'm ultimately going to cost myself money here. So I think it'll force kids to mature and to become savvier, you know, business people. And that's, again, that's men and women, right? I told you my wife, college swimmer, you know, she wasn't allowed to teach swim lessons. She wasn't allowed to do anything. You know, so it's the same thing. I think it cuts across all sports. It's going to apply differently for each sport, all genders. And I think it's just a good step forward.
That's awesome.
Well, and it's a brilliant idea too, because I know obviously, you know, in the country, there's been this debate for a while about whether college athletes should be paid or not. And one of the issues that people had with that was the possible negative impact they could have on the schools if the schools had to pay the athletes. Well, in this, the athletes can go get their own money. They can get their own market, their own image and likeness. It has virtually no negative impact on the school itself at all. It's not money that has to come out of their coffers. It's allowing the student athletes to get somebody else to pay them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, the other issue with the employment model, right? If you wanted to say, hey, well, they should be employed by the university. Well, that means they can be fired. And so, you know, if you're talking about a 17-year-old kid, right? And I played with a bunch of, heck, this was me. I came from St. Ignatius, which is a great school with great background, all that stuff. I was so immature. I was homesick. I was heartbroken. My high school girlfriend broke my heart, you know, God forbid. as happens from time to time, when you go away to college. In any event, you know, I wasn't playing. I redshirted. I wasn't doing well in school. You know, if you would have evaluated me after that first year, you'd say, hey, you know, maybe this guy's not going to work out. Maybe we should fire him and, you know, bring somebody else in. That's what happens if you're in the employment model. But if you're in the traditional scholarship model, but you allow for name, image, and likeness, you know, now nothing's really changed for the athlete other than there's an additional opportunity that didn't exist before.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. We're talking with Congressman Anthony Gonzalez. And I mean, man, you have a really fascinating and awesome story just from where you come from to where you've gotten to being able to be in the halls of Congress. One thing that you and I haven't really talked that much about is the origin of your background story. I know your parents came over here from Cuba, correct?
My father, yes. My mother was born here, but my father was born in Cuba. Yep.
Okay. And so did he come over after Castro?
Yeah. So, you know, the quick version, Castro took over, and, you know, he was starting to round up followers basically. And it was a, you know, are you in or out? If you were out, it wasn't going to be so good for you. And so, my grandmother took her kids, they went off and kind of hid. This isn't the right parallel, but sort of like an underground railroad of sorts. They were waiting for a visa to get processed so that they could, escape, so they could come to the U.S. And so they were hanging out in friends' houses and basements and all that, just trying to avoid capture, because the Castro folks were looking for them. And then they ultimately, came to Miami. They were in Miami for like a month, and then up to Cincinnati, actually. And, you know, that's their, then where they started building their life. And, you know, my father started a steel business the year before I was born. He started that in 83. I was born in 84, and, you know, runs it to this day. And that's sort of when I think of the country and I think of our country, I mean, look, we've got flaws. Everybody knows that, but I'm so proud of this country. This country is unbelievable. I mean, for my story to even exist is a testament to just the opportunity that's out there. Now we have to extend that opportunity to everybody, right? But the notion that you could escape a communist regime, come here with nothing, know nobody, not speak the language, and then within one generation, you know, you can build a business and your kid can serve in Congress. I mean, that just doesn't happen everywhere. In fact, it almost happens nowhere. So, you know, it's really just one of, again, when I think of our country, I love our country. I'm proud of our country. And I think it's an amazing place despite our flaws. You know, that's what I think of when I think of sort of what's possible here.
Right. Right after that, we'll go to you, Erica. I know, Garbs and I have this conversation. We've had it several times privately, just about how how much our family stories had impacted us personally, and knowing our individual family histories and stuff like that. What kind of impact did knowing all of that, knowing what your father and your family went through to get here and all that, how much of an impact did that have on you personally, just knowing that family history?
Oh, an enormous impact. I mean, so, you know, my father's mother, my abuela, she was, you know, my best friend growing up. She lived with us. My grandfather, he passed away when I was in the third grade, and then she lived with us basically, you know, until I graduated high school. And she was the one I always talked to about this stuff. And I asked her to write a book. She wrote her memoirs before she passed away. And so knowing her story, and it was actually sort of those conversations with her that ultimately led me to want to run for Congress, because she always used to say something to the effect of, look, if you ever see your country going in a direction that doesn't feel right, where you just know in your gut that, you know, things aren't moving in the best direction, you have an obligation to get involved. And that doesn't mean you run for office, but you have an obligation to try to save your country, because, you know, I lost my country and I had to leave my country, and I didn't have anywhere to go. If I didn't have America, I wouldn't have had anywhere to go. And so, you know, those lessons, and those conversations with her have always been in the back of my mind, knowing, you know, if I ever felt like, hey, the country needs service and I feel like I can provide it. I'm not saying I'm going to solve all the problems in the world, right? But just if I think I could make things better, then I had an obligation to do it. And sort of with her voice in my head, that I decided to get into this.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Erica.
So talking about your culture and your familia, what's it like to be the first Latino to represent Ohio in Congress?
You know, it's a big honor. You know, I don't want this to sound, I guess, arrogant. Right? So there's a phrase out there, which is, if you can't see it, you can't be it, right? You hear that a lot. I don't believe in that phrase. I believe that if you see something that's never been done before and it's important and you think you can do it, then damn it, you go do it. That's what I believe. And you know, I knew when I got into this that nobody, that no Latino had ever been elected to Congress in the state of Ohio. And I was told, frankly, by a lot of people in my own party, you know, nobody with the last name Gonzalez is going to win a Republican primary. I was told that by a lot of people. And I said, well, you know, we'll see. I don't think you understand the voters like I think I do, but we'll see. And so, you know, you take all that and you use it as fuel more than anything. And so you know, for me personally, I'm incredibly proud of it. But you know, at the same time, I'll say this, and I've said this in other forums before, I personally need to do a better job of making sure that the Latino voice is heard more loudly in Congress. I am the vice chair of the diversity and inclusion, vice ranking member of the diversity and inclusion subcommittee on financial services. And I've done work there that I'm proud of, but I can still do more and I want to do more. And if I'm reelected, I plan to. So, but it is an amazing honor. And you know, I know that if my grandmother were still here, she'd be very proud. And that, you know, that means the world to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go ahead, Garbs. Do you have something else you want to add?
One thing I was going to say with what you just mentioned is, you know, I think that it's positive that, you know, if you feel that you can do more, I think that is the first step into doing more, you know what I mean? So that's a positive thing. So we definitely appreciate you taking some time out and answering these questions right here. So here's my question. We're going to switch back to sports right now, cause I know you're from the land. So you're a Browns fan, I'm assuming.
Oh, you have no idea.
So, and I know, of course, since you played with them, I'm assuming you're also a Colts fan as well.
I'm a Colts fan, but I'm really a Browns fan.
I got you. Well, they got the same record now, right? So what is your take on the Browns this year?
So I think the Browns have, from a pure talent standpoint, their offense, you know, if you get Nick Chubb back, I think they're probably a top three offense in the NFL because they can run the ball so well. I got big questions about Baker, you know, if Baker just doesn't turn the ball over and the Browns can run the ball the way they do, they're a really hard team to beat. I mean, it all comes down to turnovers. If we could just protect the football, I think that's a 10-11 win team. Mm-hmm. If we throw a lot of interceptions or fumbles, you know, then you're looking at a 7-8 win team. But the pure talent level is unbelievable. Like, what other receiving group would you rather have? Which other tight ends would you rather have? Which other offensive line would you rather have? Which other running backs would you rather have? Right. There's nobody that I can see in the NFL. But the quarterback position, we need to do better there.
Yeah, I after watching this last week's game, I was like, they were putting so much pressure on him. I'm like, but he seemed that like he was getting nervous.
Well, I'll say this. My offensive coordinator, his name's Tom Moore. Just an old grizzled veteran. You should look at him. I mean, he just looks like an offensive coordinator if you sort of look at him. But he he had a saying, which is a little crude, which is you could take all these pass plays and wipe yourself with them if you can't block. And so
So, that's actually great. I think I'm going to use that. I'm going to borrow that from you. I'm going to use that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and he said that after 1 week. You know, we had Peyton Manning as our quarterback. So 1 week right. He got hit, you know, I don't know, more than normal. And that was the only thing he said to us that week. None of these plays mean anything if he's on his back. So you've got to find a way to block.
Right. Good point. That's a very good point.
Absolutely. All right. Let everybody know how to keep up with you on social media, how to follow you. Know you're in the middle of a campaign, got a couple weeks left. So if they want to get any more information about that as well, your website, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So at Rep A Gonzalez with 2 Z's is my official Twitter account. At Anthony Gonzalez is my personal one, though for my sanity, I have gotten off of Twitter.
It's not bad. Not a bad decision. Not a bad decision.
This was a mid-COVID innovation. My wife was like, all right, I'm done. Like, you, this is already bad enough and you're in a bad mood. Like, you got to get off that stupid. So that was her genius. So I don't post much on it, but the at Rep A Gonzalez, is probably the best one. And then VoteAnthonyGonzalez.com is our campaign site. You know, those are the best ways, but really just appreciate you guys having me on. Always great. Great being with you. Great to meet, my two new friends, Darby, always great to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you spending some time with us, brother.
Special thanks to Anthony Gonzalez. You guys stay tuned. We'll be right back after this message.
Do you feel like everyone is yelling at each other, but no one is listening to each other or themselves? I'm Kira Davis, host of Just Listen to Yourself, a weekly exercise in critical thinking and drawing our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Because I believe when we take the time to examine our own talking points, we can realize we're not always saying what we think we're saying. Download Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis on iHeartRadio or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did Paul Revere really say, "The British are coming"? And how was George Washington chosen to lead the first American army? Join us for the Growing Patriot podcast, a place for curious kids to ask the big questions about our nation's history and get kid-friendly answers from the country's top experts. Help your child learn about and cherish America's exceptional history. Subscribe to Growing Patriots on iHeartRadio or wherever you get your podcasts today.
This is Necessary Roughness.
Welcome back. This is Necessary Roughness. All right, gentlemen. So if you haven't already heard, the Raiders, Trent Brown was placed on the reserve COVID list, which sends five starters back home. So my question, should the NFL create a bubble like the NBA? What do you guys think? Garbs, let's start with you.
I don't know if they would be able to create a huge bubble like they did with the NBA. I mean, the NBA did like a great job with it, you know, I think, but there's so many more people that are involved with the football game. So I don't know if they could create a bubble on the large scale, but, you know, maybe individual teams can create something, but they're going to have to, though. They're going to have to figure something out because one player can literally infect the entire team and screw up any chances of that team going forward into the playoffs or into the remainder of the season even. So something is going to have to be done.
What do you think, CJ?
Yeah, just like Garb said, as far as bringing NFL teams into a bubble, that is a tall order to ask. There's just way too many people involved. I mean, from the training staff to front office staff to the players. Then you got to think about players' families, coaches' families. You got the equipment managers, not only, you know, the arena attendants who run the clocks and things, but you got the referees, and it's just so many. It'd be a logistical nightmare to try and get all those people into a bubble and keep them isolated. Plus, you got to look at when the NBA did it and where the NFL is now. The NBA did it. They're already, what, most of the way through their season, getting ready to head into the playoffs. So they had less time to really finish out the remainder of the season. We're kind of right in the beginning part of the NFL season. So to put that many people in one shared space for that long is just a recipe for really disaster. I don't think the players would be able to handle it. I don't think a lot of people would be able to handle it. I mean, look how most of the country handled being quarantined for the months that we've been in quarantine. I mean, Garbs almost grew like a chin hair. That's how crazy things got for him. So
I can grow a beard, bro. I can grow a beard.
I don't know. So the NBA, like Garbs said, the NBA did a great job with it, with the timing of the COVID and quarantine happening, and with the remainder of their season left, the NBA did the best they could and really did a great job with it. But the NFL, that's a completely different ball game. It would be very difficult. It'd be very difficult to pull off.
Okay, yeah, so before we even began recording, we had a great, there was a great conversation that actually began about this topic. So we're going to bring in Dario. Dario, let's hear what he has to say about this topic also.
Yeah, so Garbs and I were discussing this before the show started. And it does seem like it would be hard to do. I know the teams did their own bubbles for like for mini camps and stuff like that, but it was each team basically had a bubble. So with the NFL, there's just so many different personnel. But if players continue to be careless and not take the proper precautions and end up getting COVID, something's going to be done. They're going to have to do something, because it's either that or you're going to end up losing the season. So, I mean, I'll toss this to you, Garbs. Like, what in that situation, what do you do? Because they're going to, if players are going to continue to catch COVID, they're going to have to do something.
Yeah. I mean, the players are going to have to be responsible first and foremost, because, you know, like if they're going out and kicking it and hanging out, you know, and having parties and whatnot, you never know who is coming into those parties or what they're bringing with them. So, you know, they're going to have to be super careful and extra precautious about this thing, because it really can affect their income, you know, their income and their livelihood, even beyond just winning or playing the game itself. So, you know, I think that the teams are individually are going to have to put some responsibility on these players and potentially create some sort of mini bubble type of situation, because it's obvious that the whole testing thing is not foolproof.
Right. CJ, what's your thoughts on that real quick?
Yeah, I would have to agree. At this point, it really falls on responsibility of the players and the coaches to create an environment to where we can keep everybody safe. And we need to start with making sure that everybody associated with the team is taking this pandemic seriously, because I think that's one where we're missing the ball at. Is players are kind of just, oh yeah, there's a pandemic out, but I'm still going to go do my thing. You know, I'm still going to go out, kick it, whatever, like Garb said. So the coaches need to have a sit down with the players and say, look, we got so many more days in this season. Now, we can either continue to go as we're going, where guys are kind of free to do as they will, or we can really lock this thing down and make sure that we are taking it seriously and pretty much do what's best for each other and keeping each other safe and making sure that we stay quarantined and try not to put ourselves in harm's way anymore. Because like you said, Darvio, too many players now are popping up on this list. And some of them are big name players. I mean, Cam Newton just got on this list. He just had it. And, you know, praying that, that nothing's happened to him, or he didn't feel too sick or anything, or that nobody he knows has caught it from him. But that's big. When a guy is with the bigger name as Cam Newton catches it, that lets you know that this thing needs to be taken seriously. And the NFL commissioner, owners, head coaches, everybody needs to at some point have some sort of sit down with everybody and really lock this thing down.
All right. That was good. All right. Let's wrap that up. Before we begin, you guys, this is the time I know everybody has been waiting for. Let's go into taking them to church. CJ, take the mic.
Yes, amen, amen, and amen. Giving all praises to the big fella upstairs for keeping our lights on and keeping our spirits strong. And of course, praise be to you for joining us here today. I am the Honorable Reverend Dr. Al B. Good, and I welcome you here to the Feet of Faith, Hands of Healing, Heart of Hope and Helping, Tabernacle of Twix, Kit of Cat, Laugh of Taffy, Snick of Curse, Star of Burst, the most holiest and jolliest of ranchers, Crunch of Bars, M of M's, New International Temple of Reese's Pieces, Cups, and Fellowship Incorporated. Church, before I get started, amen, Deacon Garbs, let me ask you a question. What would you do for a Klondike bar? Don't answer that. I've witnessed you do stranger things for less. Let us not forget about the time you drank a mushroom, kale, wasabi, and gym sock sweat-flavored smoothie just for an opportunity to meet 80s superstar David Hasselhoff's impersonator at the Walmart in Cleveland Steel Yard Shopping District. I pray mightily for your common sense and digestive system that night, my brother. Church, as you've undoubtedly noticed, we have another slight tweak in the name this week as the Devil's Day, All Hallows Eve, approaches us at the end of this month. With that, our most gracious of benefactors, the patron Saint Uncle Luke and the apostles of the Two Live Crew, who still hold the naming rights to the church, have entered into a tentative agreement with the Mars Candy Corporation to use the church for a co-sponsored event called Mars Candy Presents Uncle Luke's Tricks and Treats Halloween Costume Contest 2020. Rest assured, church, Luke has assured me it will be a very hopeful and holy event. Praise be. But speaking of tricks and treats, watching the football landscape this past weekend was definitely full of tricks and low on the treats, as multiple teams from college to the NFL took the field to play last week and got completely blown off of it. From the Buccaneers beating the tar out of the Packers 38-10, the Steelers beating the Browns 38-7, and yes, church, our beloved Jaguars lost to the Detroit Lions 34-16. Still, even though the Jags scored 9 more points than the Browns did, they still took an L. Yes, praise be. Even in prime time, a win, this one for Dak-inspired Cowboys, looked completely uninspired against the Cardinals in a 38-10 loss Monday night. But the ones that took the proverbial cake were the games between Clemson and Georgia Tech and the Dolphins versus the Jets. Clemson tricked all over the Yellow Jackets 73-7. I heard even at halftime, the Clemson band and the football team switched places, and they still beat the senseless senses out of the Yellow Jackets. While, may I add, playing the Flight of the Bumblebee song, just to add insult to injury. But at least Georgia Tech was able to score, unlike the New York paper airplanes, who I can't really call Jets anymore because their failure to launch is truly awe-inspiring. Church, do you smell that? Whew, I believe that funk you're smelling is a skunk. The Jets got beat by the Dolphins 24 to a big, fat, smelly goose egg. My Lord, they are bad. And now they've also decided to part ways with their big ticket of a running back in Le'Veon Bell, who has left the team for greener pastures in Kansas City. Church, it's safe to say now that the Jets are a lock for that number one spot in the draft. At least that one will be a win in the win column. Amen. Now, Deacon Garbs, Deaconess Erica, please close and lock the sanctuary doors, but keep the windows cracked to let some of this skunk funk out as we take up a collection for the teams that got blown away by their superior competition last week. Amen? And remember, church, no matter how crazy this world may get or how big an L we may take, you never have to worry about me because I'll be good. Hallelujah.
Thank you, Pastor. Thank you. All right, you guys. We have less than a minute. Let's say final thoughts. CJ, start it off. What's your final thoughts for today?
Oh, well, thank you, Erica. Finally, I get a chance to start it off. Well,
and don't forget to tell the people how they can catch up with you in your social media.
Of course. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at KenCobb70, on Facebook, CJ Cobb. Just remember, the Jaguars right now are in ninja training. We lay low to spring up and surprise attack our foes. Garbs, it's on you.
Yeah, after that, all I have to just say is follow me at Garbs Infinite for the truth about the Jaguars.
Oh, get the heck out of here. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, how about and you find the truth about your hairline, which you ain't got?
Why you mad, son? Why you mad?
All right, you guys. And before we wrap it up, I want to say a quick rest in peace to my cousin, Angelo Catala, who passed away on the 21st at 5:30 in the morning. You know, he passed away from a fatal shot in the abdomen. I just want to say to everybody that lost a family member, my heart goes out to you. Until next time, you guys, meet us right back here, same time, same place. Necessary Roughness. Much love.
Distributed by FCB Radio Network.